Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Evening, everybody. So I'm aware that some of you do follow the company and some of you probably it's a new entity. So I'm going to have half of the slides or a little bit less than half the slides introductory to get anyone who's not familiar with the business up to speed. And then about half the slides a real sort of more detailed update for those of you who do follow the company. And I assume we'll want a little bit more detail. Avacta is a preclinical biotech focused on immuno-oncology. We'll be in the clinic next year. We can talk about that as we go through the presentation. But to give you a little bit of an understanding of what immuno-oncology is, before we go into the detail of specifically what our Affimer platform can do in immuno-oncology that's differentiated and valuable. Immuno-oncology is all around harnessing the patient's immune system to fight cancer. Okay, so there's a number of ways in which you can do that, but fundamentally, a human's immune system is capable, in many cases, of dealing with cancer as an aberrant cell, if it can recognize those aberrant cells as not being normal, healthy tissue. So immuno-oncology is all around harnessing the patient's immune system to recognize cancerous cells and deal with them in some way or another. And there's been lots of successes, some very stunning successes. I mean, I just pulled up one example. This is all public, by the way. It's not private information, obviously. Sandra Sais was, within months of dying, unfortunately, in the mid 2000s, stage 4 melanoma. She was treated in the UK with what at the time was a experimental drug, now approved, called ipilimumab, which is a CTLA-4 antagonist, and long story short, complete remission, and she's still alive and perfectly healthy today. So there are some tremendous success stories in the immuno-oncology space. And a very brief, I'm not going to go through a lot of detail here, but just to set the background for you, since around the late 90s, when the first what would truly be immuno-oncology therapies were approved, there's been a number that you might recognize. Herceptin, some of you will have heard of, treatment of breast cancer. That's the ipilimumab that was approved, as you can see, 5 years after Sandra Sais was treated with it. And probably one of the biggest sellers, maybe even the biggest seller now, is Merck's Keytruda, which is a PD-1 inhibitor. So there's been a huge, and I think I've got some numbers there, there's been a very large number of cancer immunotherapies approved in recent times, and that number is accelerating, as you can imagine. Okay, so what exactly does it mean when we talk about immunotherapies? And obviously this is at a sort of fairly straightforward, simple level. Immune cells like your T cells see a tumor cell by various signals that they have on their cell surfaces. And that's how they interact and, if you want to personify it, talk to each other, and that's how they understand whether a cell is healthy or not. And those signals, you've heard me just mention PD-1, and there are many, many of these. It is a very complex system, but just to sort of think simplistically for a minute, those signals on the surface of the T cell feel the tumor cell and try and understand whether that's a healthy or a not healthy cell and how to therefore deal with it. And what tumor cells have evolved to do is present the corresponding signals on their surfaces that say, I'm perfectly healthy, leave me alone. So in this particular case, PD-1 and CD80 are kind of switched off and dealt with by PD-L1, okay? So an immunotherapy would therefore block those signals, for example, on the cancer cell surface, making that cell appear as a cancerous, unhealthy cell instead of allowing it to present those healthy signals. And that's what an immunotherapy will do. It will block, for example, PD-L1 on a cancer cell surface, allowing the immune system to attack that cell. That's the basis behind immunotherapies in general. and there's a but, of course. There's always a but. And although there have been some great successes and a lot of promise around immunotherapies, there is a fairly limited overall response rate to immunotherapies. And if I explain briefly why, I can then illustrate why we have something really special in Avacta that can make a difference to this. Okay, so this is obviously not our data, this is Pfizer data, and there's lots of data in the literature that supports this this statement, that only about 20% of cancer patients respond to these straightforward immunotherapies as I've just described them. And you can see that depends very much on the cancer type. Melanoma actually is one that responds extremely well, but many others do not. You know, the overall response rate is well below the 20% average in some cancers. So although there's a great deal of promise, the overall response is not great. Part of the reason for that are these two different types of tumour, if you like, what we call tumour phenotypes. And you'll see that around 30% of patients are what we call inflamed tumours, or sometimes they're called, the jargon is hot tumours. So this is where the immune system has already figured out something's wrong and has started to infiltrate the tumour. So these are called inflamed tumours. In those circumstances, the types of treatment I just described can assist the immune system and you get good response. So things like the, you know, these ones that respond well at this end of the graph are typically inflamed tumour phenotypes. But the challenge here is this, that 70 to 80% of patients have non-inflamed tumours. So these are where the immune system is stuck around the periphery of the tumour and not infiltrating the tumour. So treating them with a PD-L1 or a PD-1 inhibitor doesn't help the immune system because it's not in there yet. Okay, so that's the problem that we, and of course many other biotech and pharma, need to address. Okay, so what do you do? You can improve the patient response rate in both of these categories. On the left, those with already inflamed tumours, you can start to treat the patients with more than one immunotherapy. And this is very much the way the you know, the industry is going and the standard of care is going. To, for example, treat with two of these immunotherapies at once, whether that's in a single molecule or a combination, you can get improved benefit for the patient. Okay, so that's reasonably obvious. The other approach, which of course is far more interesting, is to get these patients, you know, from this non-inflamed tumor type into the inflamed tumor phenotype, and then you can treat them with these types of immunotherapies. And in order to do that, you need to do something to the tumor that is pro-inflammatory, creates that inflammation, makes the tumor hot when it's not. And then the immune system can infiltrate the tumour, providing you do some other things in tandem as well. So that idea of combining a pro-inflammatory treatment with immunotherapy is a major focus of many biotech and pharma. And one, you know, one example, and to be honest, the most successful example to date is to combine chemotherapy with immunotherapy. And then response rates do improve significantly. The sort of standard of care at the moment, using a monoclonal antibody to do this, there are some issues with that, because monoclonal antibodies are expensive. So if you want to treat a patient with two of them, then you're talking several hundred thousand dollars per year per patient. So there's a real cost implication there for insurers and payers, which doesn't necessarily make make this very attractive. Okay, so antibodies are expensive. Antibodies are also fundamentally big molecules. So their ability to penetrate deep into the tumor is more limited than if you have a smaller therapeutic protein. And that's a long-winded introduction, but that is where we have some significant advantages as a biotech with a platform technology, which we call AFIMA technology, which is a new class of drugs that we'll carry on to talk about through the rest of the presentation. So what you see here is a comparison of obviously a model of an antibody, okay, and an Affimer. And these are roughly to scale, actually. An Affimer is around 10 times smaller than an antibody. But like an antibody, it has a functional part to it, which is highlighted here in red just to make it easy to see. And that is the bit that recognizes the target. So that could be the PD-1, the PD-L1, the CTLA-4 in ipilimumab. Yeah, that is the bit that binds to the target and blocks it or has some other function. And the benefit of what we have with our platform, the Affimer platform, is that it's much smaller. So remember, deeper tissue penetration. It is considerably cheaper to manufacture for technical reasons I won't go into. And particularly when you start to make those combination therapies where you're looking at hitting two targets at once or even three, you've got a major cost benefit there. And we have a very, very flexible platform in terms of making more complex and more effective therapeutics. And that's what I'm going to go on to talk to you about today, because we have a very novel way of getting that pro-inflammatory event to try and improve the overall response rate of those patients with non-inflamed tumors. Okay, so that's the introduction, and I apologize, I know this is a technical story, but it has to be to be able to sort of get across the value of what's in the business. So remember, the problem is how to shift some of these patients, these tumor phenotypes, into the inflamed category. And so what we have come up with in collaboration with one of the top US medical schools, a place called Tufts University School of Medicine, is called a drug conjugate. So this is a single molecule, which is an Affimer that's attached to a chemotherapy. So instead of delivering the antibody plus chemotherapy as separate things, in which case you get a systemic, full body dose of the chemotherapy with all the side effects that entails. This is a single molecule where the Affimer helps to target the chemotherapy specifically to the tumor. So that's obviously one benefit, where you get a lower systemic tox side effects because you target it. But it's far more interesting than that. So what we have developed with Tufts is this linker that attaches the chemotherapy to the Affimer only gets cut when this molecule gets into a tumor. It doesn't get cut and release the chemotherapy in healthy tissue. So that's one of the, in fact, as far as I'm aware, that is unique in the specificity that we have in that linker for release in the tumor and not in healthy tissue. So that allows us to target some extremely potent toxins into the tumor, because if that linker was cleaved at all in healthy tissue, the potent chemotherapy would go to healthy tissue as well, and you would have systemic tox side effects. So it allows us to look at very potent toxins. It gives us specificity to the tumor, and the beauty is that toxin is inert, inactive when it's attached to the Affimer. So until it's cut off and becomes a separate chemotherapy, it doesn't do anything. So the safety profile should be very good indeed. Okay, so that is something that we refer to as tumor microenvironment active drug conjugates. And the reason for that is that that linker is cut by an enzyme that's upregulated in the tumor mass, not inside tumor cells, but in the tumor mass. And that also makes it unique. And let me explain why. So this shows you obviously a schematic of a tumor mass. There are tumor cells in here, yeah? So invasive and non-invasive tumor cells. And many treatments most chemotherapies are supposed to get inside the tumor cell to kill that cell from inside, okay? What we've done is we've been able, because of that targeting to the tumor via the Affimer and the release of the chemotherapy in the tumor mass, we've been able to target other cells in the tumor. And the potent toxins that we're using create a massive inflammatory event when they kill those cells. So the idea is to get the chemotherapy specifically into the tumor with a good safety profile, It's only cut when it's in the tumour mass in general. And that toxin attacks other cells, bystander cells, in the tumour mass, creating a massive inflammatory response. Your immune system then recognises that, comes in, starts to deal with the cancerous cells. And because we're using a PD-L1 affimer to target the tumour, you're also blocking that immunotherapy escape mechanism. So I appreciate that's a complex, but for those of you who followed the company for a while, that hopefully is useful, sort of more detailed information on exactly where we're heading with this. So the type of drug conjugate that we're developing with Tufts uses the affimer, which in the first instance is a PD-L1 blockade. Okay, so it's a very well understood immunotherapy mechanism for improving the immune system response to cancer. A linker, which is unique and proprietary and only releases the chemotherapy in the tumor microenvironment. So very important to the value of this overall drug. And a warhead, which can be a super potent toxin. Okay. Again, for those of you who followed the company for a little while, to give you a little bit more detail, a little bit of an update. These are some data from recent animal studies for our lead molecule, our lead affimer PD-L1 inhibitor, which will be in the clinic next year. And what you see here, I think I put some arrows on those top three lines. This is a mouse model, okay? So it's a mouse model with human PD-L1 in the mouse. So we use a human PD-L1 antagonist inhibitor in the model. The top three lines are just the control data. So that is the growth of the tumor that is implanted in the animal if you do nothing effectively. So that's the control antibody, the control affimer, and just water. So this is the growth of a tumor in a bunch of animals. It's not just one animal over time. The next line, the green line, is that chemotherapy that I described. It's a super potent chemotherapy. It clearly has an effect on the tumor growth rate in the animals and slows that down. These are very aggressive tumors. You don't normally see them regress. And then we see two more data points. Atezolizumab, I'm sorry if you can't read the writing at the back, but atezolizumab, this blue line, is a marketed antibody. So it is one of the treatments on the market currently that's an anti-PD-L1 monoclonal antibody. And the red line just below it is our lead affimer candidate that will go into the clinic next year. So obviously it's great to see the affimer candidate perform in this efficacy model as well as one of the marketed monoclonal antibodies. But what's also interesting and really encouraging is that when we then treat the animals of with a combination of the PD-L1 affimer and the chemotherapy, a bunch of these animals go into complete regression, the tumor disappears. And also, when you re-challenge the animal with the same tumor 2 months later, it's completely immune to that re-challenge. The tumor will not grow. So it has a long-term immunity to that re-challenge with the tumor. So the tumors are going into complete regression. I think it was 4 out of 8 animals, if I remember off the top of my head, and you have complete immunity to re-challenge, which is really what you want to see in these models. Okay, I'm not gonna go through all this slide. It'll be on the website. For those of you who've seen these types of diagrams before, this is the immune cycle. This is a summary, so I'm not going to go through it, but this is a summary of what we know from preclinical and clinical studies, what we know the chemotoxin will do in that immune cycle. And there's a number of things that it does when it kills those bystander cells, to mainly macrophage in the tumor microenvironment, that are very positive in terms of getting that pro-inflammatory response. And finally, I've banged on about that linker, the proprietary linker that only releases the chemotherapy in the tumor. And this is a little bit of data here, which is also, you know, really encouraging data that shows that here we see in a whole range of different tumors, pancreatic, bladder, breast, and so on, this is the amount of the enzyme that cuts that linker in those types of tumors, yeah, compared to healthy tissue. Okay, so what that tells you is this is a great enzyme to use to cut the linker, because there's effectively none, very little in healthy tissue, and many cancers are hugely upregulated. So if you can get absolute specificity to that enzyme, you will get tumor targeting with this chemotherapy, and that's what we see. So just a reminder then, the molecule looks like an Afimer that targets PD-L1, so you get the immune checkpoint blockade. A linker that's super specific to the tumor, gets cut in the tumor microenvironment, releases the chemotoxin, and you get that pro-inflammatory response. And some, in the first instance, a really potent, almost at the end of the scale in terms of potency chemotherapy that we can start to use with this. Okay, so thinking more about key milestones and value inflection points as investors, that's really, I guess, what's certainly what you can get your head around rather than necessarily the disease biology. So the top line is the drug conjugate program that I have just described. Okay, so we a major milestone at the end of this calendar year is we will have for the first time in animals efficacy, proof of concept of that full PD-L1 AVA-100 TMAC drug conjugate. So that's the first time we'll see for the full molecule the efficacy in animal models. So that's a key point, and we should be in the clinic about 18 months later with that molecule, assuming we get decent results. What's equally important, at this stage, potentially even more important, I can tell you when we sit in business development meetings with large pharma, recently, again, those of you who follow the company will know we did a very significant deal with LG, South Korean pharma, a subsidiary of the LG group. Now, one of the key questions they ask is, what about safety? This is a new class of drug. It's not been into man yet. So what do we know about safety? There isn't time today to go through all the data. We know a lot preclinically about safety, which is all very positive. But still, getting into man is really important and is a major value inflection point for this company. And so we are progressing that PD-L1 lead candidate as quickly as possible. We'll start what's called the CMC process, which is manufacturing material to go into clinical trials very soon this year. And the regulatory filing and the first patient dosed will be at the back end of next year, pretty much on target for what we've been expecting for a while now. So that is a really important point where we demonstrate safety and low immunogenicity in man for the Afimer platform as a whole, let alone for the PD-L1 antagonist. Just for the people who want the detail, the currently planned, and it may change, but I don't think it will, the currently planned second study just beyond that will be to combine the PD-L1 Afimer with the chemotherapy as two separate drugs in parallel with running the single molecule drug conjugate program. And then finally, the bispecific, so this is a single molecule again with two Afimers, one that blocks PD-L1, one that blocks LAG-3. That is about 12 months behind the PD-L1 program. And so we should see a regulatory filing in about 2 years' time. So there's a number of preclinical and clinical milestones. Of course, on top of that, there's the deal flow, which has really gained momentum over the last 6 months or so, the deal with, or at least the option exercise with Moderna, the deal with LG. Obviously, other things in the pipeline that we can't talk about, but there should be good commercial news flow on the back of that as well. So those of you who look at the website or see other presentations that we give, we'll usually see a pipeline diagram like this. So just to let you know what you're looking at. So we have these main programs around PD-L1 LAG-3 antagonists and that bispecific that I just mentioned going forwards. The real purpose of those is to feed into the drug conjugate program. Then we have another couple of programs around what are called agonists rather than antagonists, and so not blockers, but stimulators of the immune system. Again, all potentially feeding into where we really see the value building over the next couple of years in this drug conjugate area. And to be frank, when we speak with large pharma about what we're doing and keep them up to speed, it really is this area that gets people excited. This is what people want to hear about and want to hear the updates on. There's a bunch of quite significant collaborations we've got going on. I mentioned Moderna. We've been working with them for a while. They've just exercised one of their commercial options to take some Affimers into development. To put it crudely, effectively, we've delivered our part of the research collaboration. They now have those molecules to take through into development. The deal I mentioned with LG, headline $300 million deal for four targets plus in oncology and inflammatory disease. Just kicking that off with them, we did that deal before Christmas. And a number of other smaller collaborations, and a lot in the pipeline, to be honest. So just then, as a quick summary, preclinical biotech, focus on immuno-oncology. We'll be in the clinic within the next 18 months or so, possibly sooner, but let's say 18 months to give a sensible level of expectation. We have got what I firmly believe now, from everything we've seen over the last few years, a best-in-class antibody mimetic platform. So that's the name we give to these smaller proteins that behave like antibodies but are not antibodies. So I genuinely believe a best-in-class platform now, which has lots of technical and commercial benefits because it's not an antibody, so it gets around a lot of antibody patents. So you have freedom to operate in some key areas where you struggle in terms of freedom to operate with antibodies. Real focus on this drug conjugate program now, building off the back of our pre-existing PD-L1 and LAG-3 programs. A number of partnerships in place, some, I hope, very significant milestones over the next 12 and certainly 18 months. That's it. Thank you.
Hello. I have three related questions, if I may. I seem to recall attending a presentation by Avacta about 2 years ago. And at that time, I understood that your primary route to market for the Affimer technology was going to be as a diagnostic tool, as antibodies are used for diagnostics. So the first question is what happened with that route to market, if I understood that correctly? Secondly, I'll put them all because they're related. You were asked at the time about potential immuno-oncology applications, and again, my recollection is that you weren't going to go down that route because it would be hugely expensive to get into clinical trials, which leads on to the third question, which is how are you going to fund the clinical trials and what sort of degree of dilution can shareholders expect before there's any sort of monetization event?
Yeah, thanks. So I suspect that's longer than 2 years ago. The point about generating revenues through diagnostics, I've really only touched on the bottom just in terms of time. But it's a good question because it allows me to say that we do actually have two parts to the business. I mean, I focused here on therapeutics. It's certainly when we speak to investors, the therapeutics is the key area that most of them, not all, but most of them focus on. But we are generating revenues through generating Affimers to get into third-party product pipelines. So that's absolutely going on. And certainly, on other occasions, I might talk about that in more detail. And certainly, for example, the numbers that are in the market include those projected revenues from the licensing and sale of Affimers into diagnostics and research tools as well. So that has grown well. Although one of the things that we talked about, I think at the prelims 6 months or so ago, was that it takes a long time to get someone to evaluate a technology, to put it into their product pipeline, to develop a product, to get that product to market and generate revenues to give us royalties. So one of the additional things that we've done, and I think we talked about this last year, was to start to build a very small pipeline of additional diagnostic Affimers ourselves to be able to effectively license the assay rather than the raw material to speed that process up. So I suspect when you're recalling was probably longer than 2 years ago, but the history is we acquired this IP back in 2012. So the business acquired the IP around the Affimer platform. And certainly at that point, 5 or 6 years ago, we had no intention of going into therapeutics. That was not what investors wanted us to do because it is a capital intensive way to generate value for shareholders with dilution consistently until you get to the point where you're generating significant upfront payments. Okay, that really changed in 2015, to give you the sort of history, when we did the deal with Moderna. And that really, I think, stimulated major institutional shareholders to take a lot more interest in the therapeutic opportunity, which, to be frank, is orders of magnitude larger than selling into research and diagnostics. So to answer your final question, which I think was about funding, I mean, the fact is that developing drugs is a capital-intensive activity, and there will be future dilution for shareholders before we get to the point where we might be getting $50, $75 million upfront for a licensing deal. You know, I honestly think that's 2 years away, to give you some sort of feeling, because I think you need the human data. You need to take out that safety question in order to really command those sorts of deal values. The deal with LG, we haven't yet made public what the upfront was because they asked us not to for a period of time, which was fine. We will do that shortly. But that was single-digit millions upfront. Okay, the deal with Moderna was $500,000 upfront, so that shows you, you know, the sort of increase through generating the data that we've generated. When we're in man, it should be more like tens of millions of dollars upfront. And then there's a potential to become certainly closer to self-funding, which I think should be an objective. On the other side of the business, sorry, this is why I don't talk about both sides necessarily. The other side of the business, certainly we're aiming to be profitable in 2 to 3 years on that side of the business. So, and that then probably or maybe a separate entity, we can certainly look at that in future.
Alistair, very interesting. Could you tell me, your conjugate is the most risky, it's the most exciting and it's the most risky thing that you're undertaking. Has anybody tried a conjugate with an antibody and a chemo?
Yes, absolutely. So the conventional, let's call it conventional, drug conjugate, and it could be with an antibody, it could be with an ephemer actually, but the conventional drug conjugate, the difference is, it's the same concept, antibody, linker, chemo, yeah? But the conventional drug conjugate targets the tumor cell via something on the tumor cell that gets sucked into the tumor cell. So it's specifically aimed at getting the toxin inside the tumor cell. What we're doing is targeting the tumor mass outside the cells, but in the general tumor mass. So normally a drug conjugate targets, the antibody might target HER2 or mesothelin, something on the cell surface, which gets sucked in, takes the whole thing with the chemotherapy into the tumor cell, and then the linker gets cut by an enzyme that's inside the cell, okay? The antibody does nothing other than target. What's novel about what we're doing is we're using an affimer that stays outside the tumor cell to block PD-L1, which gives you that combination of the immunotherapy via the affimer and the chemotherapy. If you remember right back to the first few slides, we know now from clinical trials that combining immunotherapy and chemotherapy is much more effective. And that's what's novel about what we're doing. It stays outside the tumor cell, so the affimer stays functional as a PD-L1 blockade.
I assume that the deals you got with Moderna and LG are exclusive for that particular area. Assuming they are, eventually, if you keep out licensing or doing deals with people, you're going to run out of indications to sign up new partners with. So how many opportunities are there out there, given the limitation on the number of indications?
It's a good question. So the assumption on which you based the question, that things are exclusive, is not entirely correct. So what you would typically in this sort of therapeutic deal do is try and narrow the exclusivity as much as possible. So what you would ideally not want to do is say, we will license the PD-L1 target to you, because then that is very broad, covers many, many indications, etc. So what you would try and do is narrow that exclusivity. So that's what we do. So you may narrow it to a particular disease area. you may narrow it to a particular delivery mechanism. So with Moderna, their mechanism, as you know, is mRNA delivery. So you can start to narrow the exclusivity that you give away. So honestly, it would take a very long time for us to exhaust all the potential drug targets in all the different delivery mechanisms, in all the different territories.
So there are hundreds, if not thousands,
of possible ways in which you can slice up the exclusivity, yes.
Who your main shareholders, and over the last sort of 12 months, we've seen a retreat of some fund managers in small caps, your sort of 40 million market cap.
Yeah.
So how's it going to be funded going forwards?
Yeah. So the key shareholders, IP Group, Baillie Gifford, Ruffer, Fidelity, Lombard Odier, a bunch of reasonable institutions. Yes, it is tough in London for small cap. It is tough for biotech and life sciences in general. So in terms of funding particularly the drug development side of our business, because clearly the other side is revenue generating, I'm confident we'll become profitable in the not too distant future. So, and to get that sort of significant scale up funding, I think we not only have to look in London, but we have to look elsewhere as well. So we've done quite a bit of work in Europe, where there are some biotech specific funds, a little bit of work in China, and a lot of work in the US, so from an investor relations perspective. Over time, gradually building the story in those other geographies where we probably will raise money from in future.
Alistair, thank you very much indeed.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.